The liturgy today touches on a number of heavy subjects. Well, this is Lent after all, it's a serious season. So here we are reflecting on blessings and curses, salvation, condemnation, heaven and hell. Looking at Lazarus and the rich man, we see this is serious business and it has serious consequences. Before we get into the heavy stuff, though, maybe I should start on a lighter note. I remember trying one of my many failed attempts to use Tagalog properly. Alam ninyo, maraming mali kung nagsalita ako sa Tagalog. Anyway, maybe I was even preaching on this gospel. I don't remember the context, but I wanted to talk about Lazarus, and I knew somewhere along the line I picked up the expression taong grasa. Tama ba? Taong grasa. So I said, as soon as you say taong grasa, the image pops into people's minds, at least here in Manila, the image pops into the mind of a street person, you know, the filthy and ragged and hair, you know, dirty and matted. It's a very good image, taong grasa. So I wanted to say something to the effect of katulad ng taong grasa si Lazaro. But what came out was, si Lazaro ay taong grasa. And everybody started laughing. And like that, like you're laughing right now. Taong grasa. So it was an easy mistake to make. But obviously I made the taong grasa into taong grasa. Grasa is grease in Spanish. And grasa is grace. So the contrast between grease and grace is also very great. Okay. Although that contrast does reflect something of the message of today's liturgy too. All the readings bring up this contrast between the extremes, the most blessed and the most cursed. So let's look at these readings a bit. The first reading and the psalm set it up very clearly. There are two categories of people. Jeremiah says there's the cursed, those who put their trust in human beings, and they are like the barren bush in a desert. Their life is fruitless, and there is no hope for them. They're like they live in a lava waste, a salt and empty earth. That's the cursed. And then in contrast, the blessed. The blessed are like the tree planted by flowing waters. They have constant access to the water, and so they bear much fruit. The psalm makes the same contrast, but puts it in the opposite order. Instead of mentioning the cursed first and then the blessed, the psalm mentions the blessed man first and then the cursed. But the image is pretty much the same. Blessed is the man who follows not the counsel of the wicked. Blessed is the man who's like a tree planted by running water. He has access to the source of life. And not so the wicked. This is the cursed now. They're like chaff which the wind drives away. So this image, it's in the prophet Jeremiah, it's in Psalm, the first psalm of all, Psalm number 1. This image, it was planted deeply in the Jewish mind, the religious sentiment of the Jews. You're either blessed or you're cursed. And if you do the will of God, you're blessed. If you follow the ways of God, you're blessed. And if you don't, you're cursed. Now, what happened was, the idea started to also enter into the religious sentiments that if you see somebody who's got a good life, they're the blessed. And if you see somebody suffering, they're cursed. We make this same mistake ourselves. What do you think when you see a taong grasa? You say, oh, that poor guy, he's cursed. What did he do to get himself into that condition? Is he on drugs or something? So we make these sort of judgments. And sometimes it is their own fault, sometimes not. We don't know. But The gospel today takes this standard category, this standard categorization of people in two situations. There's the blessed and the cursed. There's the rich man and there's the poor man. And it's pretty obvious that the rich man is the blessed one. I mean, he's got purple garments, fine linen. He's feasting on fine foods every day. He's obviously blessed. And the poor Lazarus, lying in the street, licked by dogs, well, he's obviously cursed. It seems to fit the pattern very well. Which one of these two guys is like chaff which the wind is going to blow away? Obviously, Lazarus, he's dying in the street. There isn't much left to him, and pretty soon he's going to be blown away in the wind. Of course, that's not the message of the gospel, and it's not the message of the other readings either. The problem is that we apply these categories only to this world. We limit our idea of being blessed or cursed to this world, and Jesus shatters that limitation. He says, wait a minute, don't limit yourself to what you see in this world or what you experience in this world or what other people experience in this world. What happens here and what we do here, especially what we do here, determines how we will end up in the next life. And that's what we see with the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man, after he dies, no longer looks at all blessed. He no longer looks like a tree planted by running water. He's dying for one drop of water. He's asking for Lazarus to simply dip the tip of his finger in water, just a drop. He's so thirsty. So he's the one in the barren desert, the lava waste, salt and empty earth. And Lazarus, he's got it made. Lazarus says he's in the bosom of Abraham. He's in the embrace of the holy ones. He's in heaven. So our idea, first of all, the idea of the people of Jesus' time had to be broken open. And our idea has to be broken open. And once it is, we no longer evaluate ourselves, if we follow the word here, we no longer evaluate ourselves as blessed or cursed based on what we have or don't have. Because we're simply on the way. None of us here are in the condition of Lazarus, and we probably never will be. None of us here is in the condition of the rich man either, and we probably never will be. But in a sense, it doesn't matter. Because what matters is what we do and how we are preparing for what comes next. Now the question is not what do we have or not have. The question is what are we doing for the taong grasa in our life? What are we doing for the Lazarus in our life? Which is a challenging thing. The rich man in the parable had Lazarus right at his doorstep. Right in his face. He had you'd have to call it a golden opportunity to do something for this poor man. And he did nothing. Why is he cursed in the end? Why does he end up in a place of torment? Because he did it to himself. What he didn't do for Lazarus, he didn't do for the Lord. And he didn't do for himself. You could say he cursed himself. He exiled himself. That's why this is such a challenging thing to us, because we go through life with golden opportunities set before us. And I don't simply mean the taong grasa and the street, because sometimes it's very hard to know what to do for a literal taong grasa. You can't even talk to them. Have you ever tried to talk to a taong grasa? They don't even, it's very hard even to relate to them. I've sometimes approached people or said hello, they have you know, that strange look. Maybe there's some mental illness or whatever, but it's not that easy to know what to do for the individual person who's in the street. But he's that Kaungasa is not the only Lazarus in our life. Anybody in need, anybody with an absence, a loneliness, a longing, a sadness, an illness, any one of them is the Lazarus for us. And there are lots of Lazaruses. We live in a world full of Lazaruses. In fact, all of us are Lazarus on some level. So we can see each other, if we see each other with our eyes open, say, well, everybody has some poverty, some need. And then the question is, well, what can we do? What must we do for the other person? Not how can I enjoy my purple garments and my good food. I'm the only one wearing purple today, I know. I got a purple garment right here. But how am I using that purple garment for your sake? That's the church is not for its own sake. No one is called for his own sake. Yes, we're called for our own salvation, but so that we will become instruments of God for others. Today's saint is a great example. I mentioned him at the beginning, Saint Casimir. He was a rich man. For sure, he was a rich man. He had it made. I saw in the little note we have in the Anuam Way that he was supposed to be married to the emperor's daughter. He was the son of a king. He himself was a king, a prince. He could marry the daughter of the emperor. He, you know, not a care in the world. He could have easily fallen into the condition of the rich man in the parable. But he chose to follow the Lord. He chose to serve others. Love of God and love of neighbor, not self-indulgence. Love of God and love of neighbor. He's a great Lenten figure, St. Casimir, because he prayed, he fasted, and he gave alms. He prayed very much. He fasted. He's a man of great self-discipline, self-denial, and he gave alms. He gave up his wealth to the poor, serving the poor. That's why he said at the beginning, even though he was born a rich man, when he died, he ends up in the condition of Lazarus because he emptied himself in this life. The Lord filled him in the next. That's why we honor him as a saint. Great Lenten instruction for us. Great Lenten examples for us. There are two paths. There are two ways to go. We, in the tortuous condition of the human heart, we mix this up all the time. But Lent is telling us, get on the right path. Get on the path of selfless, of sacrificial love, of other-centeredness, of God-centeredness. Get on the path of denying that tendency to indulge oneself, to make ourselves the center of our life. Get off that path that leads to a barrenness and dry desert condition. Get off that and get on the path that leads to life, fullness of life, fruitfulness for the glory of God, for the salvation of souls.